Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Another Liga FV season is upon us. The 2022 campaign has kicked off. Game week one is complete and there is lots to talk about. Joining me today to discuss all of it is FV English member Kevin Vivas. Kevin, how are you?
Hello, Jordan. Good, and you? Well, it's a pleasure to be again with you in this podcast and to start 2022.
Well, we're without Dominic due to timings, although Dominic held the fort for FV English over the weekend. I was away on holiday and Kevin is quarantining ahead of a trip to Europe. The first time he's seen some of his family members in a long, long time. So we're getting Kevin in before he probably disappears from not just FV English, but perhaps unsay FV for a while. Kevin, are you excited to be going to Europe? Are you going to be watching some European football live whilst you're there?
Yes, of course. But I will try to keep watching football because I could during the mornings I will be alone in the home. So I will try to keep following some matches. But of course, I'll try to watch the new Barcelona, which has been good. So maybe it's worth to attend again to a game.
Yeah, it's been, I think, 7 or 8 years since the one and only time I've seen Barcelona live at the Nou Camp. I know you've been before, but it's like you have to go. If you're in Barcelona, you have to go and watch them play live, don't you?
Yes, the last time I went, it was the treble team in 2015. But when I knew I was coming, I saw that it's not the same to come to a Barcelona game. But they are starting to increase their performance. So let's see.
And what some people might not know about Barcelona and Liga FV is there is a link. There's a direct link. And that is in the form of David Zaldzman, Monagas' midfielder, new from Deportivo Táchira. But he actually had some of his earlier career in the academy of Barcelona, La Masia, before playing some football in the US and then returning to his home country of Venezuela, where he's now a Liga FV player, a 2021 champion with Deportivo Táchira and a new signing with Monagas. And we've already seen quite a bit of Zaldzman because Monagas, unlike the rest of the league, had their season start a couple of weeks ago in the Copa Libertadores. Kevin, how did the Copa Libertadores go for Monagas? We know two games and that is where their journey has sadly already ended.
Well, when you talk about the link between Barcelona and FV, I didn't find it, but amazing the link with Zaldzman, even playing in Monagas, blue and red. But about Monagas, very disappointing because the first leg made all of this disaster. The second leg was okay, but not enough to overcome all the bad results they had. I think that the physique ambit has been very important because it was minute 60, even minute 30, when they have to go back to attack after defending a counter attack. They were so slow. They so very tired. The midfielders did not run to offer an opportunity to create. It was very notorious that not having some games in FV affected to their performance.
Yeah, and for those of you who didn't watch the game or aren't aware of the result, Monagas played Everton of Chile in the Copa Libertadores qualifier, and the first leg held in Chile was won by Everton, the hosts, 3-0. They were 2-0 up after 25 minutes and added the third goal in the second half. The second leg, Monagas won, 1-0, obviously not enough to take the tie to extra time. But looking at the stats was actually quite interesting because there was a lot of discussion after the game, which we'll talk about in a minute. But when it comes down to the stats, Monagas had 51% of the possession to 49. So, you know, neck and neck, but just about averaged it. The passes were very similar. Everton made 469 passes. Monagas made 459, so only 10 fewer, but with a higher pass accuracy. So would have completed more accurate passes. Their pass accuracy was 80%. Everton's was 78%. When it comes to shots, this is the big differential. Everton had 17 shots to Monagas's 10, but Everton had 11 of those shots on target. Monagas didn't have a single one of their 10 shots on target. So when you look at the stats, everything seems, other than failing to hit the target, everything was pretty similar. Even corners were the same, 4, offsides the same, 1, yellow cards, 3 to Everton, 4 to Monagas. Without watching the game and just looking at the stats, you could be forgiven for thinking perhaps Monagas were unlucky. But after the game, there was a lot of discussion. Ex-players made their comments on Twitters. Fans were quite vocal and pundits in pointing out that this result was probably down to the fact that, you know, the Venezuelan season hasn't even started yet at this point, and Monagas had no rhythm. And then even you and I saw ourselves the next day or the day after that at the Liga Footbay official presentation. Even the president of the league, Akram Al-Matni, felt obliged to comment on the discussion going on. And he said for him, footballing results on the pitch come down to the players and the coaches. Kevin, what do you make of all that discussion that happened after the game? Because it even led to the president of Monagas issuing a statement before the second leg.
Yeah, I think that what Akram says, it can be 30% true, 40% true, and it depends. In this case, and this is a scenario, Monagas playing the first leg without playing any match on Footbay, I think it really affected, because in the leg of Deportivo Lara, which they arrived in the first phase of Copa Libertadores, it was like February 3rd, something like that, February 2nd. Very few leagues have started their competition, very few countries. But in the case of Monagas, it already was 14 or 16 of February, or I think 20, I'm not sure. Many leagues had started, and Monagas and Venezuela haven't. So I think that was pretty important to get that result of 3-0 against. In this case, the second leg, I think that the 1-0 was also allowed by Everton, because Monagas played very cold. Everton was not like 100% focused. They even had two players that weren't playing because of COVID. So I think if Monagas pushed it so much more, Everton was gonna push more, and it was gonna be impossible to Monagas for beat them. So I think it's very important, the factor of not starting the Liga in this scenario, but it's also hard when you finish on December. So I think that the change that should exist is finishing in November in order to start in January. But as people say, if we know that we are the weakest league of South America, we have to do things to overcome that, to overcome it. So starting in January could be a good solution, but of course, finishing before, because the players need holidays also. Colombia, for example, they start on January, but they make a 1 month and a half holiday on June. So that could be also a solution.
And when you mentioned just then, you know, Venezuela, the idea that perhaps Venezuela has the weakest league in South America, are you referencing the stereotype or the general opinion, or is it an opinion that you hold yourself?
It's a blend between many, because the stereotype, of course, we are. But I think that we have many factors against us that doesn't allow us to have a stronger league. And that's related to the Venezuelan situation or the Venezuelan club situation. If Paraguay would have a league of 15 or 16 teams, they would have a very poor league. And Peru is one of the weakest as well. Maybe they compete with us. And I would say that they could have worse results than us in the last decade. And Bolivia, they have the advantage of the hate in La Paz and the other cities. Mm-hmm. I'd say they compete, Bolivia, Peru, and Venezuela. But in the fact, we can say we are not, we can say to the people, we can say to the continent, we aren't the weakest league in South America if we don't have the results.
Yeah. And it's the reason why I asked you is, as you know, in the WhatsApp chat for Football English, you, me and Dominic were discussing a couple of weeks ago, back in January, the publication of the International Federation of Football History and Statistics had released their global standings of the leagues worldwide. And Venezuela was in the top 50 leagues. They've risen 20 places to 50th in the world, overtaking Chile and Peru, who had both fallen. So they have us as the eighth league out of the 10 comparable leagues, with Bolivia just above and Chile and Peru just below. I know you were very vocal in, you know, not really agreeing with how that ranking went, but your point about Bolivia just now is relevant, because the other Venezuelan team that entered the Copa Libertadores at qualifying stage was Deportivo Lara, who were against Bolivian opposition, Club Bolivar. And in the first round, the home round, the home leg in Venezuela, they did okay. They lost 3-2, but considering the away goal rule had been scrapped, they did have something to take into the away tie. However, much like Monagas's first leg, which again was away from home, things fell apart. Deportivo Lara lost 4-0. They were 1-0 down at halftime, finished 4-0. That second half was a capitulation. 25 shots Club Bolivar had in total. Deportivo Lara only 3. So both of Venezuela's teams that entered Copa Libertadores at qualifying round have failed to make the group stages. Caracas and Deportivo Táchira will enter at group stages. So they're going to have 6 games, 3 home, 3 away on the continent. But for Deportivo Lara, I personally expected a bit more. How do you feel the tie went over the two legs?
Well, at the end of the day, if you see Bolívar is the strongest team. Well, there is a team called the strongest, but it's one of the strongest team in Bolivia. And it's like playing Táchira against Always Ready, and Táchira beat them 7-1, and Bolívar, which is like a Táchira in Bolivia, they beat to Deportivo Lara 4-0. And well, particularly, I didn't watch the matches. I just could watch a little bit of the first leg, and the things went well. And there was a mistake of the goalkeeper and some defensive mistakes that were very obvious that not playing, that not being prepared in official matches affect. But as I told, it was like the first day of February, is understandable what happened there. But yes, the Bolivia's league is very aided by the fact of the hate. And you can see as well with the national team, even the players of the biggest team in Bolivian league, they are from the national team. That's something that does not happen in any nation here in South America.
And since those two games have taken place, amongst all of it all, the league season, the Venezuelan league season for 2022 has kicked off. It started last Thursday. It finished on Sunday. 16 teams down from 21 in the top division this season. Some absent due to not meeting the requirements to play in the top flight, and some obviously were relegated at the end of last season. The regulations mean the one team that earned promotion haven't actually taken a place in the top division this season. So we're down to 16 teams. So there were 8 games. We've got another new format for this season where everyone will play everyone twice. So at that point, the league will then divide into a championship round, if you like, which will compete for the Copa Libertadores group stages and the title. Then a sort of South American, Sudamericana qualifying round, both of which everyone will play each other twice. And then there's a final between the top two teams, and the bottom team out of the 16 get relegated. Kevin, I know you were a big fan of the format last season. What are you a fan again of this new format?
Well, I think that there should be another reduction to 14 teams, because to become a professional club, you need to be sustainable, and you just get money if you are in the first eight teams. Otherwise, if you sell a player or a player that you developed why sold, etc. But for that reason, I would prefer to just left six teams without money after their local results. So I think that there would be a little another change about the format. I like it so much the format of 2021 because you were obligated to win. Because the format was very direct, just seven teams in a group, and you at least had to finish fourth to qualify. So all the games to qualify to Copa Sudamericana, to try to qualify Copa Sudamericana. So every game you had to win, and more if you wanted to qualify to Copa Libertadores or being the champion. In this scenario, it's the same finish fifth than finish 12th, right? I think it's 12th.
Yeah, so that's correct.
There is a big gap. So if you are in the middle and you can lose and the league is not gonna be over. Also, if you are first, maybe the motivation here, if you finish first, the final is gonna be played on your ground. That's the advantage. But otherwise, you can be relaxed if the fourth place is. Yes, he's 10 points behind you. You can be relaxed. If the second is in the same height of you, but the fourth is 10 points less than you, you are relaxed.
Yeah, the remaining problem is one that you've been telling me about for 3-4 years, that teams can, 75% of the season doesn't really matter. And then the last 25% does, because you, like you said, you can finish 12th or finish 5th. It's the same. You're into the round for South America, Sudamericana qualification. But what I do like about this this new format is it keeps the Apertura Clausura format away, which I wasn't a fan of at all. And similarly, it keeps the calendar full for the whole season. Every team is going to play at least 30 games. The majority of the teams are going to be playing 40 to 45 games, which is healthy, particularly considering the Copa Venezuela, which we still don't know too much about in terms of when it will start, is supposedly being treated as an under 23 tournament where only three players over the age of 23 can be in the starting lineup. So particularly in terms of competitiveness and minutes being earned by players, it's a full schedule. But on the subject of minutes, one big drastic change ahead of this season, which has been spoken about lots on social media, and I know you've got particular views on it, Kevin, is the abolition of the juvenile rule. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, but I imagine most of you will be by now, the juvenile rule is more or less a rule that stipulates that there must be at least one under 20 or one under 19, depending on the calendar dates of the next South American championships, in every team starting 11. That rule had been in place since 2007. It has now been scrapped. So there is now no longer an obligation to field an under 20 player. This year, the rule would have been done by birth year 2003 onwards. Kevin, I know you did some research into this as well to establish what the effectiveness of that rule was and what the success rate of that rule was. What were your findings?
I think that FUTBE realized that the idea is not necessarily having a big base of players, a enormous amount of players developed. I think they realized that what we must care is that we should have top players to compete. When happened this of 16 teams and just 8 teams can qualify to Sudamericana or Libertadores, the juvenile role obligated teams to start up, to line up a young player. And so in my research, I could notice that the majority of these players were not lined up in CONMEBOL competitions. So that affects considerably the tactics, the way of playing. Even they changed how they played 4-4-2, 4-3-3 because of one player also. it's another fact that they added a foreign slot. We had to play with three in pitch, and we could have four in the nominee. Now we can have five. That also makes a difference. I think that football understood that we need to compete in international competitions to grow up our economic base, to be autosustainable. Because if we don't show in CONMEBOL competitions that our players can compete with Brazilian teams, with Peruvian teams, with Colombian teams, Ecuadorian teams, the teams outside of Venezuela will not want to buy our players, just expecting to be free and the teams not getting any money from that. So I think the first step is starting to compete well in these tournaments. So I think the Germany role, adding a foreign spot, a foreign slot, is a good way to start. And that all of this, I think it was a suggestion from Jose Pecker.
Yeah. From talking to many people and Karima Safa on the last podcast episode, it was something that Jose Nestor Peckerman, the new Venezuela head coach, suggested. The rule has been replaced, and I say replaced with inverted commas, with the introduction of an under-23 league, which is sort of like replacing a reserve league. It's the kind of thing that's happened in Europe, in some countries. England, for example, don't really have reserve teams, haven't had a reserve league for many years. They've got like the Premier League 2, which is by and large an under-23 league. From talking to people in the past week, when that tournament is going to start and what it's going to look like is still, you know, far from being defined, at least in the public sphere. What was interesting about this weekend, the beginning of the Liga FIVB season, is back in January, mid-January, I asked on Twitter, I did a poll on Twitter, and I said this to Karim in the last episode, asking Venezuelan football fans, do you expect the majority of head coaches to continue starting at least one under-20 player per game, regardless of the fact that the rule was being abolished? 53% said yes, they expected head coaches to continue fielding at least one under-20, and 47% said no. So again, it was pretty close. But the fact of the matter was, this weekend, only Carabobo, Metropolitanos and UCV failed to field a single player under the age of 20. If we go by what the rule would have been this season, a player born in 2003 or later, exactly half of the teams started a player that would have fit the rules criteria had there been a rule this season. Out of the 16 teams, 8 teams started a player born in 2003 or younger, exactly 50%. Is that something you expected, Kevin?
Well, yes, and I think what I most like of this is that we are putting the young players to compete with big players instead of giving away the place. We prefer the 9 players, 11, 2003 years, and the 2003 born to compete with the biggest players instead of giving away the place. That would be better for the developed, because even they are not confident that they will keep playing because they are not other juvenile or because they are way better than the other juvenile. So that's important. Yes, and I expected, because in my researching, I realized that the majority of juveniles were lined up by obligation. But there were others that, at least in the last 5 years, because I think that we started to apply the rule just for inertia, because we saw that it worked. So the real good juveniles were playing even with other juveniles alongside. So yes. For example, Caracas, they play with Guarirapa and René Rivas because they did very well in Copa Libertadores under 20. Mm-hmm. And Gerson Chacon also is a juvenile. He was the best player of the league according to the awards in 2021. Of course, he was going to play, but it's better to not be comfortable and compete with Richard Figueroa, with Edson Tortolero, with other players, instead of compete only with Carlos Vivas or Jesus Quintero, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and the drop-off rate was equivalent of seven players. Had the rule been enforced, we would have seen at least 16 players born in 2003 or later. In reality, we saw nine. So it was seven players fewer. But interestingly, it wasn't evenly spread out. Like I said earlier, and it's worth repeating, although nine players started, born in 2003 or later, they were spread across only half the league, across only eight teams. Academia Puerto Cabello, Useve, and Carabobo did not have an under 20 player on the pitch at any point, be it starting or coming off the bench. Whereas Caracas and Deportivo La Guaira both started three players under the age of 20. One from either team would have qualified for the 2003 or above rule. Rojas for La Guaira and Reni Rivas for Caracas. Interestingly, both played at left back. Whereas Mineros utilized the most players under the age of 20. They utilized six. Four players coming off the bench, born in 2003, and one player starting, Kevin Kelsey, who was born in 2004. Let's get on to the results. We've spoken about the influence of the rule and what we saw in match week one, or game week one rather, but the results at the end of the day are what people are interested in, and this is how it went. Deportivo La Guaira versus Metropolitanos was the first game of 2022. I was lucky enough to be in attendance. Giovanni Bolivar scored the first goal of the season, returning from a season-long loan at DC United, where he played for Loudon, their USL affiliate. That game finished 1-0. Puerto Cabello drew 1-1 with Portuguesa in their new Kappa kit. Little side note, wasn't very impressed with the Kappa kit. I'm a big fan of Kappa, but it's a very average shirt. UCV and Carabobo drew 0-0. Hermanos Colmenares drew 1-1 with Zamora in the Barinas derby. That was Noel San Vicente's first game back in charge of Zamora. Mineros lost 3-1 to Monagas in the Oriental derby, or the Clásico de Oriental. That Monagas game was interesting for a hat-trick for Andres Romero, 18-year-old Andres Romero, born in 2003, worth mentioning considering all the conversation about the juvenile rule. Caracas won 1-0 over Aragua, Miguel Celis scoring in the absence of Samson Akinyula, a good goal too. Estudiantes Merida lost 2-1 to Deportivo Táchira in the Clásico Andino. And finally, Ivo Lara won 1-0 away from home against Zulia, who were down to 10 men after just 2 minutes when their goalkeeper was sent off. Kevin, I know you saw most but not all of the games. From the games that you saw, what was the most entertaining game of match week one?
Well, yes, for much. Deportivo Táchira, Estudiantes de Mérida, the environment was good. I think that there was an attendance, I'm not sure, of 4,000, 5,000, which is good for football. And also there were some polemics with send-offs. It was entertaining, yes. But the rest of the matches, I think that it was very obvious that it was the first match of the league. Very slow rhythm. Some mistakes, so much mistakes. Even the Caracas-Aragua game, it was Caracas just played the first half, but the second half the ball was for Aragua, but Caracas has a strong defense, so Aragua had the ball, but they did not attack. The other game I watched, it was, Barina, Zamora against Hermanos Colmenares, very average match with few occasions. It was not the best week to watch football games, but I feel that the rest of the weeks will be okay, starting tomorrow.
Yeah, and with the Caracas-Aragua game, I think that's one worth talking about a little bit, because obviously Caracas, I think we both expect to be, you know, towards the top of the table at the end of the season, despite new management and, you know, a couple of changes, notably losing Richard Celis to Millonarios on a season-long loan. And Aragua, on the other hand, I personally, for one, expect them to be in a relegation fight and perhaps the favourites to be relegated. Yet it was only 1-0. It was an early goal. And like you said, Aragua had the lion's share of possession in the second half. Do you share my worries for Aragua? You saw the game. How did they look?
Even when I was watching the game in the stadium, I saw about, we talked about that we believed Aragua was going to be one of the worst team on the of the season. And Caracas, of course, one of the best. And it was completely the, it's like a reminiscence of what we believe of the league. It in football, it doesn't happen as we believe. For example, in 2021, no one expected something from Monagas, and they finished third. Maybe we don't know what's going to happen with Aragua, but they show good manners. They treated the ball very well, but I think they have a lack of quality players to solve. Rodrigo Febres, the forward, is not my preferred. And also they took bad decision, the wingers, against the defense. They had the ball, but they could not concrete. And about Caracas, I think it's worrying their performance, because I don't feel they are comfortable with this 4-4-2. I think they need a player that balance the team as well in defense as in offensive. Edson Castillo do very well in defensive, but he's not the player that is going to be in all the pitch sharing the ball and distributing them. And they need Leo Flores. And well, I think it's worrying for Copa Libertadores that Osei Bonsu was going to be off for 1 month. And well, Akinjola will come back in the next week.
And one thing with, you know, you picking up saying like Fave doesn't always play out how we expect it to. I've noticed that despite perhaps Aragua having the quietest transfer window, certainly when it comes to foreign reinforcements as it stands, they don't have any. There's quite a lot of support for the head coach, Edson Rodriguez. He has a lot of fans and a good reputation as a coach. And he certainly did a good job with them last season, despite obviously this year being absent of Alfredo Stevens, the Panamanian striker that got them the goals that led to their overachievement, if you like. Over the course of a season, can you see Aragua, you know, doing more than just escaping relegation, or should their aim be to secure survival?
With the format, for sure, they can compete in the gap from 12th to 5th. I think that's their aim, and I think they can achieve it. It's very hard to predict who's going to be in the last spot. Very, very hard, because apart of Aragua, we didn't see a team with low quality to be sure that they will finish in the last spot. But for sure that they can compete between in that second gap.
Yeah, and with the format of the season, the way it is, like even after 30 games, you know, after 30 games in the Premier League, for example, in England, you kind of know who's going to win the league, or at least it's down to only two teams. Or in recent years, there's only 8 games left at the 30 game stage. At this point, in 2022, the 30 game mark will see the top four then play each other again twice more before then a final. So it really is, whoever's in the top four after 30 games is still going to be within a chance of winning the league. Do you feel comfortable predicting maybe who you think will finish in the top four? I personally think it will be Deportivo Táchira, Caracas, Deportivo Lara, and Zamora. I think Monagas are going to be the ones to miss out, and Zamora to be the surprise package in the top four.
Wow, yes. Táchira, for sure. I think that they have very good players to solve the problems that they could have. Caracas, now I doubt, according to what I see, although they have very good players to solve as well, so I would put them. And the third and the fourth place is going to be very, very disputed. I trust in Monagas. I like the players they have for football. They are good enough, even they have a good bench. And also, I would see that Deportivo La Guaira is going to be a surprise, taking in consideration that they have many, many young players. And also, another candidate. I don't trust in Lara. I personally don't trust in this Deportivo Lara season. Let's see. Yes, let's see what happened with Metropolitanos, but it's very hard to predict now.
Yeah.
I didn't like so much Zamora, what I saw of them, and as we know, they need a good midfielder. They need a good midfielder to play as Cheetah like to play.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Lara, the reason why I think they can get top four is, I think sort of player for player, you can't argue that they don't have one of the best midfields in the league with Manzano and Segovia in central midfield, with Freddy Vargas on one wing, Janoski Reyes as the 10, and then Rojas or Castillo or Abina on the other wing. They've got a strong five across the middle. I think what will define whether Lara can get that top four is whether they can get enough goals from their number nines to break into that top four.
And you know that also a key is the team that would qualify in group phase of Copa Sudamericana, as happened in 2021. Yeah. Metropolitanos was starting very good, but they had to concentrate on Copa Sudamericana and they just started to decrease their performance. So that's important.
Yeah, and I think Metropolitanos getting into the group stages of the Sudamericana this season could be disastrous for their league campaign. I think they're potentially the team that could have the biggest negative surprise this season. Jose Maria Mora is a coach I really like, and I like the football he's had them playing in recent years. But, you know, they have lost Abraham Bahichili, who is a big loss. And they're not a deep squad when it comes to talent anyway. He gets overachievement out of his squads. And I think without, you know, a regular goal scorer, because, you know, Erwin Anton was their top goal scorer last season. He's 34. And Danny Perez, obviously, it's been over a year since he departed, and he only had that one season in the first team that was enough to get him a move to Club Brugge. I wonder where Metropolitanos are going to get their depth from if they end up in the group stages of Sudamericana, because you can't be in the group stages of Sudamericana and not give it your all. If you rest players in the Sudamericana to concentrate on the league, it would just you'll probably result in some embarrassing results, which isn't
what... No, you're missing opportunities to show your players as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Away from the league, looking sort of back towards the Copa Libertadores, but the future, we don't yet know what the group stages are, who's going to be drawn against who, but Deportivo Táchira and Caracas are going to be Venezuela's representatives in the group stages. What are your hopes for those two sides?
Wow, it's hard to say because it depends, as you said, so much of the rivals. But they have a deep, both have a deep squad to compete in both competitions. And what I also like of Caracas and Táchira keeping up in Venezuelan league, something that we didn't have so much in the last decade. Caracas sometimes was fourth, or Táchira was even in the middle of the table. And now I've seen that these big teams, that they are very organized as institutions, when they receive money because of their results, it shows how they behave, and it shows how good they are as corporation. So it's been good that Caracas and Táchira had good results, because they are starting to be very different and being outstanding in Venezuelan football. And also there is a fact of the, what I would say, the weight of the shirt that affecting this in this competition, Copa Libertadores. I have seen that it's not the same for a Venezuelan players competing in Copa Libertadores when they are wearing a Deportivo Lara shirt, instead of when they are wearing a Deportivo Táchira or Caracas shirt. I think that they feel as a big team in Venezuela, they have to present as well, and they feel like more there, like more aggressive to do better things.
Yeah, and I think although you're a Caracas fan, you'll probably agree with me that perhaps Deportivo Táchira is Venezuela's best chance of getting deeper into the competition this year. In 2021, Deportivo Táchira won all three of their home games, 100% record, but lost all three of their away games. And that even meant on the last day, a game that was away from home, that most things were in their favour to qualify and finish in second place. But they ended up losing heavily 6-2 to Olimpia and finishing third going into the Sudamericana. And they then lost in that first game too. But I think Deportivo Táchira are actually stronger for 2022 than they were in 2021. Of course, they lost a couple of players, but I feel like they replaced those players with equal quality, if not better. I think they've got a really strong, not just an 11, but a really strong squad.
Yeah, for sure. I think even in 2021, they have a deep squad. Now it's stronger. Also, a disadvantage is that they don't have the same DT as Táchira and Caracas. And that makes things a little bit different because they don't have the same motivation from the boss to overcome this kind of matches. And even the squad is not completely the same. And I think that a key factor in Venezuelan teams in Copa Libertadores is the motivation, is the confidence. And when you have experience in a row, you are more prepared to do it. And Táchira has 2021 and just two in a row. And if they would have kept the same manager, it would have been way better. Even also Caracas with Noel San Vicente, which they qualified to the group phase in 2020. In 2021, they just were in the previous phases.
Yeah, and the signings that Deportivo Táchira made, I think the one that impressed me the most isn't a striker or an attacking player, although they signed many of those players. It was actually Restrepo, a defender from Colombia, from the top flight in Colombia, and statistically one of the best performers as well last season. He was at Atletico Julia. He was a starter 35 games in Colombia last season. 8 challenges won a game, which was 66%. Just under 2 headers won a game, which was 59%. And 5.4 interceptions per game. The only downside to his profile as a centre-back is that he is pretty short, but he's also very fast. You know, I think it was defensively away from home where Deportivo Táchira came undone last season. Mm-hmm. Carlos Vivas in particular was one of the best players in the league as a centre-back statistically, but his youth and inexperience was shown in the Copa Libertadores, where I don't like singling out any player for criticism, particularly a young player, but he was exposed in the Copa Libertadores. Perhaps the experience of Restrepo is something that will plug that gap.
Yes, and even they have Marrufo with experience in Colombia and even international competition with national team, but Jodes, and the incorporation. The development that has Quintero gained in the last season. I think he has gained so much confidence being in the best 11 of the Liga Football 2021. And in the last match, I saw Quintero with a bigger confidence that he already had in 2021. I think he knows he's able to do good things. And yes, the central back has been very good players.
Yeah, and I wish Táchira all the best and Caracas. Obviously, I hope they can both get out of the group stages. But ultimately, as someone that can afford to be a neutral, as somebody that's, you know, not Venezuelan and not particularly having any one team in Venezuela, all I hope for is that a Venezuelan team can get as far as possible in the competition. To wrap things up before the end of the podcast, I would just like to go through UNCE Fútbol's team of the week for that opening week. We have Kevin here, a pivotal member of UNCE Fútbol, who, if you don't know, won the media award in 2021 at the end of season gala hosted by El Mundo Es Un Balón. UNCE Fútbol recognized as the best football media outlet in the country. So Kevin, as you're here, I know you're one of Fútbol English as well, but congratulations for that achievement at UNCE Fútbol.
Thank you.
To go through the team of the week picked by Kevin and his peers, Diego Moros, new member Jesus Elias Rojas, Jenser Barona and Fernando Prieto. I think I've remembered everyone. Here is the team of the week. In goal, Alain Baroja, Caracas, a returnee to the club, a new signing, but one who's been in the club colours before. In defence, Carlos Rojas, 2004, John Aramburu, 2002, Joel Cáceres and Manuel Granados. In midfield, Edson Castillo, Maurice Cova and Andres Romero. Romero, 2003, a hat-trick, a match winner and the league's official player of the week. And up front, Edin Yilber Navas, Richard Figueroa and Giovanni Bolívar. So in that 11, there are two players that would qualify for the juvenile rule this season if it still existed, and a third player under the age of 20 in John Aramburu. On the bench was Carlos Olces, goalkeeper, Deportivo La Guaira, Giovanni Ramos, Rupert Quejada, Gustavo Gonzalez, Minanino Flores, Samuel Sosa, and Miguel Celis. Kevin, thank you for joining us today, and I wish you all the best in your adventures in Europe. It will be great to have you back in Venezuela in a couple of months, hopefully with Caracas and Deportivo Táchira's Copa Libertadores campaign well and truly alive.
Yes, hopefully. Even I booked my flight back in order to be in at least a game of Caracas FC in Copa Libertadores. I think I will arrive in the last home game of the group phase. And yes, well, it's a pleasure for me to be here. It was a very nice conversation. So if I have time in Spain, I will accept any invitation.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Kevin. And thank you, everyone, for listening. This was the For the English podcast.